Everybody who matters is already here. Let's go. Do a lot of business.
Morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning. Have a good event. The fundraiser, whatever you.
We had a talent show. It was awesome. Yeah.
Okay, we got one of the chairs outnumbered 3-1. Guess which one it is.
That was a school fundraiser in the morning. Yes, that was very successful.
Okay, Patrick is here somewhere. Okay, good morning, everyone, committee members and public. We're going to open the House Committee on General Government and Consumer Protection. The date is May the 26th, 2011. And we're going to start with public hearing. I'm going to open up public hearing on Senate Bill 53. Jan, please bring us up to speed, and we'll ask Das to come up and talk to us about the amendment from the from Chair Hovey.
Hi, Mr. Chair, committee members. Senate Bill 53 was before you last month. It's the bill that directs the Department of Administrative Services Director to appoint members to a charitable fund drive committee in order to set policies and implement the program. It allows the committee to enter into contract with the charitable fund drive management organization to administer the program. There is an amendment before you, the dash one, and that came from Representative Holvey. It specifies that the contract with a fund drive management organization will include the maximum amount or the percentage rate of contributions that may be kept by the organization as administrative costs. And it directs the department to disclose the maximum amount that can go towards those costs on its website and in the drive's promotional materials. And it directs the department to adopt rules setting the maximum amount. And there is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact from the Dash 1 amendment.
Good morning, Mr. Lord. Welcome, and please identify yourself for the record and give us, you want to comment briefly on these for us? We'd appreciate it.
Yes, Co-Chair Wisnett, members of the committee. My name is Fred Lord. I'm an employee at the Department of Administrative Services and the Facilities Division. I am also a volunteer chair of the State Employees Charitable Fund Drive Committee. And briefly, the committee has been in existence for at least 30 years under the existing statute and has always been staffed, if you will, by volunteers from various departments here in the state. The committee has hired an outside organization, a CMO, charitable management organization, to actually run the campaign, to prepare campaign materials, to handle the finances, and to train agency coordinators and site coordinators during the actual campaign. The three primary goals of the Charitable Fund Drive Committee are to educate state employees about the more than 850 charities here in Oregon that provide services to Oregonians and the opportunities that they as state employees might have if they have a need for some of the services that those charities provide. Secondly, to afford Oregonians an opportunity to know what volunteer opportunities there might be within those charities. And third, to raise money from state employees through a payroll giving system to support those 850-plus charities. And with that, I'm open to questions.
Thank you very much for that summary and information on the state fund drive. Committee members, questions?
Mr.
Go ahead, Chair Hovey.
You know, I just wanted to touch on the Dash 1 amendments for the committee to consider, and I know I had a discussion with Das and Mr. Lord, and my concern, I guess why we're bringing the Dash 1s forward was the administrative costs of the charitable fund program and their campaign being at 10%, and it seemed like it was from my perspective anyway, it seemed like a little bit on the high end, and it may not in fact be considering the goals of what you do, and certainly no a reflection on the good work that you do and the money you raise for charities and trying to accumulate dollars to go to charities, but it just seemed like from my standpoint that the people that are giving the money to the for the purpose of these charities really should know that there's administrative cost of the fund drive campaign that takes an administrative cost, and then their money then goes to the charitable organization, which has its own set of administrative costs. So, you know, by the time their dollar ends up getting to the charitable organization, it is somewhat diminished, and I think people should be aware of, you know, of those administrative costs up front. Because I know that when I go to my bank and say I'd like to give to this charity, and they just set up an electronic transfer fund, and it doesn't cost anything, and so the charity gets a larger amount of money. And so, you know, not saying that the good work you do doesn't help raise more money, and I'm sure it does. I just think people should be aware of those administrative costs when they're participating in that program, as opposed to just giving money after the fact directly to a charity. So that's really the purpose of the Dash One amendment is just to keep an eye on those administrative costs. And I don't know if you want to, you know, give us your candid point of view on that or not, but certainly you're welcome to, because I think it's something that the committee should consider, or, you know, one way or the other.
Co-Chair Wisnett, Representative Holy, members of the committee. I shared the Dash One amendment with the members of the committee and got back basically support for the amendment. We appreciate, actually, the fact that you brought this to our attention. It wasn't something that the committee had taken an active current consideration of. It has been because the volunteer committee reviews the actual proposed budget through the campaign year, and then at the end of the campaign approves the final budget. So we have continuing monitoring of the amount of money that is spent in raising the pledges. But the point of making some note both on our website and in the contract about what the amount should be is a good one, and we're going to follow up on that, of course. I would point out that I did ask our CMO if they had any information about what other similar campaigns cost, and they didn't have much. I got one note that United Way of Lane County charges a flat 12% for their United campaign for the city of Eugene itself. I don't know if that's indicative of what's out there in the market or not. It's just one. There's one point source. But we are in favor of the amendment itself and appreciate your bringing it to our attention.
Other questions? Sure, help me.
No, that's good. Thank you very much.
Ms. Lori, thank you. And thank you for your volunteering on this. I don't think we're prepared at this time to get into it. It's probably ways and means, but you just know off the top, is where does most of the admin charge go to? Is it like the process, the checks, and take it out of the payroll? Is it going, do you have some sort of breakdown on how that admin, not detail, but just general?
Yes, Co-Chair Wisnett, members of the committee, we have an actual campaign budget, which I believe was provided earlier to the committee. If not, I can provide another copy. I have it with me. About $22,000 goes to printing costs. We have been enthusiastically driving that down as we have moved to an online pledge form with a website so that Oregonians can see all of the opportunities there are to volunteer and to give. About $35,000 goes to the actual personnel costs of the CMO in running the campaign. And then there are costs for the website itself, for postage and mailing, because many of the campaign materials have to be sent to communities, not here in the Lamb Valley. Burns and Pendleton and Lakeview are good examples. And there are the Governor's Cup, which is awarded to folks who pledge more than $500, has to be mailed. So there are significant mailing costs. And then there are other costs that are normal in any kind of organization. The audit, the annual audit takes place. I can't recall all of them off the top of my head.
Thank you very much for that information. many years ago as a second lieutenant, I used to be put in charge of all the fund drives, and there used to be one a month, I think. And then when it was combined like this for the military, it does the same thing as far as picking your charity out of which one you want and things like that. It required, I lost a lot of extra duties as a second lieutenant, so that was good. But thank you for that, for your information. No, there's no other questions. Thank you very much. And we'll close the, are we in a public hearing? Yep. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 53. Committee members, I'd like to move this. Chair Hovey and I would. Everyone prepared to move the bill? And we'll open this going. Mm-hmm. And we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 53. And discussion, committee members? Seeing no discussion, Tamara, please call the roll.
Well, we have to have a motion.
And Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments be adopted to Senate Bill 53.
Thank you, Chair Hovey. Chair Hovey moves Senate Bill 53 to the floor. Vadu passes
the amendment.
The amendment first. We don't have it in. Okay. Okay. Chair Hovey's moved the Dash 1 amendment dated May 24, 2011 to Senate Bill 53 be adopted. Discussion on the amendment. Seeing none, amendments adopted.
And Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 53 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Hovey moves Senate Bill 53 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Discussion?
I'm here.
Seeing none, now we'll vote, Tamara.
Representative Cameron.
Excused.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Co-Chair Hovey?
Aye.
Co-Chair Wisner?
Aye. Do you want
to carry
that, Paul?
Sure.
Okay, the motion carries. With that, we'll close work session on Senate Bill 53. Can't go back to the top.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to open a possible work session on Senate Bill 292. And Jan, will you recap where we are on this bill, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Committee members of the committee has heard this bill. This is the bill that prohibits imposing a financial obligation on a consumer who accepts a free offer unless the offer complies with disclosure and billing information requirements. The committee adopted the Dash A5 amendment, and that amendment deleted the emergency clause. And before you now, you have a Dash A8 amendment that is proposed by Mike Dewey, and he is here to speak to that amendment.
Mr. Dewey, would you like to come up, please?
Amendment A8.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Please identify yourself and provide us your brief discussion on Dash 8.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairs and members. Mike Dewey, for the record, representing DeHart and Darr. You may recall this is a bill, very quickly, in terms of what the bill does. With regard to free trials, there is a quid pro quo. If you accept a free trial, and there's consideration, you're going to at some point purchase something within the structure of that free trial. This is a bill that requires certain disclosures, and we have no problem with that. The disclosures are basically that it must be clear and conspicuous, number one. Number two, you have the opportunity, and you need to know you have the opportunity to cancel the offer. Thirdly, you need to know the person, the consumer needs to know how to cancel the offer. We have no problem with that. The issue for us was the language in the bill that dealt with how you would cancel, and we discussed that previously. And for my client, it's the periodicals. And in reading the amendment that we had provided to you previously, I was talking with Mr. DiLorenzo, who represents a magazine publisher. He was reading this a little bit differently than I was, and to be sure, we did not want the effect of this bill to be cumulative. In other words, we would have to provide all of the different ways of this is the way that you could be exempt from the offer. In other words, cancel the offer. And so one way is a toll-free number, which was problematic for us. And the other part of that, it is the substantial manner in which the offer is made. And that was the issue for us because the offer may be made at a Borders, but if you went back to cancel at a Borders, you couldn't do it because they were not in control of the offer. And so we wanted to do that through an invoice. So that's what this bill does. But with the previous amendment, it put us in a position, arguably, of reading it, that we would have had to do it in perhaps three different ways, all three as opposed to the one that we're offering up. And that is, in the amendment, that you would do it by the invoice. So all of the disclosure would occur in the invoice. So we're not doing anything that is duplicitous here, sneaky. Everything that's required would be required under the way that we want to do it. But from the liberal leading, the words that are in the statute, if this were law, we wouldn't be able to comply with the substantially similar. So that's why we're making this change.
Thank you. Committee members, questions? Representative Chair Hovey.
Thank you. I haven't had a lot of time to look at the Dash 8, but you know, it seems to me that what you're explaining, you already have the ability to accomplish this in the bill already, the way I see it, and I'm just a little confused by how this does anything different than what the bill already allows you to do when I'm looking at what you're taking out, what you're putting back in, it allows you to do it by calling a toll-free number or a manner substantially similar. And so I'm just wondering why that doesn't work.
Mr. Co-Chair and Co-Chair Holding, with regard to a number of the entities that we represent today do not have a toll-free number. And so that would be one approach that they could use, but those are expensive, and they would prefer not to use the toll-free number. So if you don't go down that road, then you have to go down the substantially similar. And the issue for a number of the periodic industry is a number of the offers now are made at bookstores in terms of the free offer. And so the way we would read this, if you wanted to cancel, you would go back to the bookstore. And the bookstore isn't in charge of the free offer. At that point in time, it's turned over to Time Inc., Better Homes and Gardens. So that's why we thought it appropriate if the individual, the person accepts the free offer, then, and the other part of this is, Mr. Co-Chair, they're frankly not going to know what the terms and conditions of the free offer are at that point in time. So we're not going to be able to make all of the disclosures. So what we would be doing is, if they accept the free offer and it's turned over to Time Inc., then at the time that they get the invoice for that, all of the disclosures are made. So they already they'll have the information at that point in time. It has to be clear and conspicuous. It has to be that you can cancel the offer. And thirdly, it says how you can cancel, and actually for it, is that you can do it by written notice back to the person, which is the company. So that's why we think we need this, if you will, carve out. But again, I want to stress it doesn't do anything to lessen the impact of the bill to the consumer.
Okay, any other questions, committee members?
Well, I'll just make a statement. I'm just, I really don't see the why this Dash 8 actually needs to be put into the bill. I think that the current bill as drafted allows the ability of the consumer to cancel that free offer in a way that's, you know, you could exactly what you're explaining, it appears to me you can already accomplish that in the bill. So I don't know that I'll be supportive of the Dash 8.
Chair Holby, I appreciate that. This is an unlawful trade practice, and those are serious. And we wanted to be very clear that if you read these words literally, and somebody could come back and say, I couldn't, in my opinion, cancel the way that I received the offer. And I think that would be a legitimate argument for somebody to make.
Well, I can have a vote.
And that's why we thought this amendment is appropriate. Again, we don't think we are in any way lessening the impact of the bill. The bill would still have the disclosure, the right to cancel, and how to cancel.
I know where he is, too.
Mr. Chair, could we get Keith Stepanovich to come up and comment on the Dash 8?
For sure.
Since we're talking about the unfair trade practice. Mr. Chair, if I might. Mr. Stepanovich, I'm sort of curious why the Dash 8 is needed in this bill and sort of concerned about its diminishing the impact of the purpose of this bill. I was curious if you could comment on the Dash 8 for me.
Chair Holby, Co-Chair Wisnett, when we first look at this, Mr. Dewey presented his concerns, and I also felt that the clause to cancel in a manner substantially similar was sufficiently broad that it might very well enable his client to find a method that would comply with that. He has obviously a unique situation because you've got essentially a retailer that is providing a free offer that is going to be provided by a separate company, and that does complicate it. The two amendments that Mr. Dewey has proposed, the A7 and the A8, I think the A8 is better because it provides, while the language is essentially the same, where it's located in the bill is a better positioning. I'm not sure it's necessary, and my concern would be from a statutory construction perspective that we're generally reluctant to have specific provisions for specific industries, because you could make an argument that every other industry that has to comply with this bill is also going to have to figure out what's substantially similar. And so I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it does harm to the bill itself. It simply clarifies that in this particular one industry, here's how they're going to do it.
Thank you.
So, and I apologize if I'm sort of repeating the question, Mr. Chair. If I'm sort of repeating the question or asking you to repeat some of what you said, is it really clear? So if what the amendments do is keep the bill just as good as it is, but makes a legitimate and reasonable specific provision for an industry that isn't anybody trying to fool anybody or do anything wrong, but just to try to make the bill a little bit better, I'm a yes on the amendment. If you say that it makes the bill weaker, then I'm a no on the amendment. So if I'm persuaded, I should say, that it's worse than the bill, but you know, who else we got up on the dais, just you and him. So does it feel more like case A, where it's making the bill a little bit better without weakening the bill a lot, or is it more like case B, where there's trucks going to be driving through the exceptions we're creating?
Chair Wisnick, Co-Chair Holby, Co-Vice Chair Smith, I do not believe it does violence to the bill.
Great.
It does not harm the substance of the bill.
Great. Thank you.
Other questions, committee members? Chair Hovey, you okay?
Certainly.
Oh, you might want to ask somebody else to move the amendment.
Are you okay on the amendment? Yes. You make the motion to move the amendment. Jason, you want to make the motion to move the amendment, please?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash. What is it? Dash
8.
8 amendment to House Bill.
Senate Bill 292.
Senate Bill 292.
Thank you. Representative Conger moves the Dash 8 into Senate Bill 292, dated 5/24/2011. Discussion committee. Hearing no further discussion, we'll call the roll. Tamara, please.
Representative on the amendment. Cameron. Excused. Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Co-Chair Holby.
No.
Co-Chair Wisnett.
Yay. The amendment is in. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 292A as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Chair Hovey moves Senate Bill 292 to the floor with a do-pass as amended recommendation. Further discussion, committee members? Representative Sheehan.
Mr. Chair, I have to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please so declare.
I own an advertising agency, and this deals with advertising.
Thank you very much. So noted, and you're going to be a no.
may I speak to it?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be a no on this. All of this exists. The FTC actually governs all of this, and most of the language that's in here is mandated by the federal government. I think if we're trying to have a state law that governs something that's much wider reach, I think we're wasting our time. They speak to affirmative consent, the continuity billing, all of the things that this bill talks about. None of the examples that were given demonstrated anything but the person who got duped by its ignorance of a disclosure that was already clear and conspicuous. So I don't like this bill. I'm going to be a no, but it looks like it's going to pass. So.
Thank you. Further discussions, committee members? Hearing none. Tamara, please call roll.
Representative Cameron.
Excused.
Representative Clark.
Yes.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
No.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Co-Chair Holden.
Aye.
Co-Chair Wisden.
Yay. Okay, the motion carries. You don't want to carry that.
I'd love to.
Who wouldn't carry the report?
David, volunteer, please. Thank you. Representative Clem will carry it. Motion carries. With that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 292. Going to be fun today. Committee members, I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 487. Mr. Miller would like to make some testimony, and I'll make some comments, but we're going to carry this over to Tuesday. So I'll open the work session on Senate Bill 487. Good morning, Mr. Miller.
Good morning, co-chairs, members of the committee. Sean Miller. I'm here today on behalf of Assurion, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I've had several conversations with Mr. Dubanovich from the Department of Justice regarding amendments that we were attempting to craft. Excuse me. You're getting handed out a statement that I just wanted to enter into the record to clarify the products that we were trying to exempt from the statute. This committee is well aware of the products that we were discussing before. Get the amendments here. And I just clearly wanted to indicate that this committee passed 3411, which deals with the insurance, mobile electronics insurance. The products that we were also trying to cover under here were the data products. And in the exemption on page 3, lines 8, it says a person regulated by the Department of Consumer and Business Services. My client is a person regulated by this entity because they are a licensed insurance producer. So the insurance products that we were talking about or discussing before are currently exempt. However, what I was trying to clarify with the other unregulated products that my company sells, such as the data products, under the discussions I've had with Mr. Dubanovich, those other products would also be exempt, and so because they are a person regulated by DCBS, even though they're unregulated products, my company is still regulated by DCBS. So I wanted to just get that for the record. I wanted the committee to understand that and have that as part of the legislative record. And the statement indicates that. And with that, Mr. Chair, co-chairs, I'd be willing to withdraw the amendments that I was proposing with that understanding. Thank you.
Okay, that's amendment number 9 and 7.
No.
4 and...
Four and eight. Thank you very much. Any questions of this witness? Thank you very much, Mr. Miller.
Thanks.
Okay, well, committee members, so everyone's up to speed then. We had a proposal, I don't think has this committee's votes to pass Mr. Hughes's good faith amendment, dash 6, and we still have a live 7 and 9. Do we want to hear Mr. Dewey on those, or are we ready?
If you like.
Mr. Dewey, you want to refresh us and tell us? Because I know you've been working with a senator, too. Is that correct, Bonamici?
Thank you. Mr. Co-Chair, again, Mike Dewey for DeHart and DAR. I have the Dash 7. Again, it deals with the same sort of issue that we have on the periodicals, and Senator Bonamici had spoken to you earlier this week with regard to this. I believe it was earlier this week, perhaps last Thursday, that she said she could support the Dash 7. Again, on the type of offers that we make, it's almost impossible to acknowledge the renewal until we get them the information. So what we're doing is all of this information that would be fulfilled in this bill, again, is provided at the time of the invoice. So in my opinion, it doesn't do anything to lessen the impact, as the previous testifier said on 292, do any violence to this bill in any means. We're not intending to do that. We would have all of the disclosure requirements on automatic renewal. It's just we would do it in a little bit different way, but it would occur, and if it did, it would continue to be, if this passed, an unlawful trade practice act.
Again, the Dash 9 is the emergency, eliminates the emergency
policy.
Yeah,
and I think that's very appropriate
for all the other, for all
as
the
you
other
did that
businesses.
In 292.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Yes, Chair.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Dewey, on the A7, I have no concerns with the amendment. We'll support them.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Yes, Mr. Representative Smith. Thank you.
And to be clear, so you're saying the chief sponsor of the bill is comfortable with the A7 amendments?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Smith, what I heard last Thursday is that she was favorable or okay with the Dash 7s. I heard that.
Okay.
It was on the record. That's what I heard.
Great.
Sometimes people hear things, but that's what I heard.
I understand. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we're in work session. If it's your pleasure to go ahead and adopt the amendments, I know you wish to carry the bill over, but perhaps we can go ahead and adopt them.
I agree.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash A7 amendments dated May 18, 2011 be adopted to Senate Bill 487.
Chair Hovey moves the Dash 7 amendments dated May 18, 2011 into Senate Bill 487. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair, I have to declare the same conflict of interest or potential conflict of interest as before I own an advertising agency.
You got to sell that company, man.
I mean, I'm going to have to do it again later.
It's like all these bills, man.
Thank you, your statement so noted.
Like
another discussion?
That seemed like an automatic renewal.
Right.
That is.
Yeah. No other discussion. No objection. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash A9 amendments dated May 18, 2011 be adopted to Senate Bill 487.
Chair Hovey moves the Dash 9 amendments dated May 18, 2011 to Senate Bill 487 be adopted. Discussion? Your same statement. there any opposition? Seeing no opposition, the amendment is adopted, and we'll carry this over till Tuesday. And that way, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 487. Open work session on Senate Bill 491. Jen, update us on this, please.
Mr. Chair, committee members, the committee heard this bill last week. It modifies requirements for notice of foreclosure and termination of tenancy to tenants of residential dwellings in foreclosure. You have the dash A5 amendment before you, which restores the definition of tenant at severance to the definition used in current law.
Come up and just tell us about the dash five, how that came to us.
Right.
Paul.
Co-chair, members of the committee, Sybil Head with the Oregon Law Center here. We're in support of Senate Bill 491 with the A5 amendments. These were worked out in cooperation with Mr. Cosgrove. I'll let him explain them since they're his amendments, but we are supportive of the adoption of those amendments, and we hope for passage of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, Paul Cosgrove, representing the Oregon Financial Services Association. The A5s remove the word created in two locations, one on page 8 and also in section 7 on page 20. That word was inserted by legislative counsel as a grammatical clarification, but unfortunately inserting that word tends to change the priority or confuse the priority of recorded land documents, so we asked legislative council to take that word back out. It wasn't requested by any of the proponents or opponents of the bill at the time. It was just one of those clarifications that actually does have a substantive change, and that's what the dash fives do, is remove that one word in two locations.
No, he knows. Just a minute, please.
Sybil and Mr. Cosgrove, I had written that the A5 restores the definition of tenant as sufferance. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, staff, not really. If I can find real quickly the one place where the whole language is, it's not the definition of tenant and sufferance. It's the priority of a trust deed, and the words before were prior trust deed, and they made it trust deed created prior, and it's not when the trust deed was created, it's when the trust deed was recorded that gives it the priority. So it's not really tenant and sufferance, it's the priority of a trust deed that created referred to.
And for the record, it's the change is on page 8 of the A engrossed bill, the A5 in line 3 of the A8 or of the A bill. The A5s would remove that bolded word created,
right,
where and it currently doesn't exist in the statute. And you're right, counsel, that is related to tenants at sufferance, but it's not necessarily the definition of tenants at sufferance.
Right. It's in the section about tenants at sufferance. Thank you.
Chair, I'll move the dash 5s and I'll carry it over.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 5 amendment dated May 16th, 2011, to be adopted in Senate Bill 491.
Thank you. You can for your
thank you.
Chair Hovey moves the A5 amendments dated May 16th, 2011, to Senate Bill 491 be adopted. Any discussion? Further discussion? Committee members, is there any opposition?
Just over here. Sorry. Discussion.
Yes, sir.
I'm pretty good at legalese. Did you want me to take a stab at come up with like a conceptual dash 11 or 12 right now?
If you have one, Representative Glenn.
Give me a few minutes.
Actually, level six on Smurf Village will have.
No opposition to the amendment. The amendment is adopted. Committee members,
22, by the way.
We're going to carry this over to Tuesday. With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 491. Okay. Committee members, we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 846. Jan, we have a dash 7 for this. Would you...
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 846 is a bill that requires manufacture of bicycle trailers designed to carry people to affix a label that informs the consumer if the trailer conforms or does not conform to the standards. The dash A7 amendment is before you today. It allows the court to award prevailing party, not only the prevailing plaintiff, the reasonable costs and attorney fees. It also changes the application from trailers sold to trailers manufactured on or after the effective date.
Nothing.
You guys need to remove yourself?
Somebody should remove us.
Yeah. You said Jack does. Be good.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim.
Stop. Dude, we're not laughing at anything. It's immature, and we apologize. Blame him.
I would agree with that.
Committee members, you've heard dash 7. I'd like to move the dash 7 amendments. The thing here is the senator brought this amendment forward. Remember, he discussed it. He was willing to bring this in that addressed the liability or something more specific. So,
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 7 amendments dated May 20th, 2011 be adopted to Senate Bill 846.
Chair Hovey moves dash 7 amendments dated May 20, 2011 to Senate Bill 846 be adopted. Any further discussion?
I just have a question, Mr. Chair. What was the source of the amendments?
Go ahead, Jan.
Representative Conger, the amendment about the prevailing party receiving reasonable costs and attorney fees was presented by Senator Przonski,
mm-hmm.
and then the changing the application to trailers manufacturers and trailers sold was introduced after a discussion I had with his staff. As the bill reads now, it applies to trailers that are sold January 1st, 2012, and now it would apply to trailers manufactured on or after the effective date of January 12th, 2012.
Okay, I'm back.
Well, I might add that, you know, the senator did note that there was some opposition on the other side of the building based on the prevailing plaintiff language that was previously in the bill, and so he removed that and put in the prevailing party, so...
Points it, both ways.
Yeah.
I understand.
So it sort of takes away some of those concerns that he encountered on the other side of the building.
Committee members, I'd like to move the amendments if everyone is ready. But no further discussion. Is there any opposition to the dash 7 into Senate Bill 846?
Okay. I have to declare it. Burley Trailers is actually a client of mine, so I just have to put that on the record.
Thank you for so doing. Any other discussion? Then there's no opposition. I see no opposition. The dash 7 amendments dated May 20, 2011 to Senate Bill 846. Committee members want to carry this one over. So with that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 846. Done 53. And committee members will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 294. Again, I think the amendments have all been adopted in the issues. You want to, is that correct?
No.
Amendment dash 4, that's it. Okay. Want to move the amendments?
We're in public hearing. You opened a public hearing.
Oh, I did a public hearing. Okay.
Chuck,
you and Mr. Van Landingham want to come up again? And you did a great job last time, and I think your discussion was about the dash 4s.
I'm sorry.
I
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Van Lanningham. I work as a legal aid lawyer in Lane County. I previously testified on this bill on May 17th. The amendments were not ready on May 17th, so this is the first you've seen of the amendments in the hearing. I was still negotiating with Legislative Council to get the amendments right on at that point. They're dated May 19th, and they are right. It's a gut and stuff of the whole bill, so the dash fours are the bill. I would note that this is a product of the Manufactured Housing Landlord Tenant Coalition. It's got about 25 members, residents, landlords, manufacturers of manufactured homes, interest groups, the state, and we negotiated in 19 three-hour meetings from October of 2009 until January of 2011. This is a I think the 11th legislative session in which the coalition has negotiated and produced a compromise bill amending landlord-tenant law regarding manufactured home parks. The bill has two significant issues in it, one having to do with submetering of water, the other having to do with subdivision of parks into, conversion of parks into subdivisions. There are a couple of smaller issues. I've given you a revised copy of the book I gave you on the 17th. It's 12 pages describing in detail what's in the bill. I've also given you a one-pager on the sub-metering issue because I think that's the issue that you may most likely be interested in. I can review that in detail or I can answer questions however you would like.
Thank you very much.
And they're here to, Chuck Carpenter and Patch Walker are here to say yes. Go.
Okay, thank you very much. Committee members, any questions for any members of the panel on the dash four?
Mr. Chair, I just want to give Chuck an opportunity to voice his support, I suppose, for the bill.
Sure.
Thank you, Co-Chair. My name's Chuck Carpenter. I represent Manufactured Housing Communities of Oregon, which represents about 500 manufactured home communities here in the state of Oregon. We have participated in the coalition since its founding, and we support this piece of legislation with the two concepts, one being the conversion issue that I know is important to Representative Clem, and the other piece being the submetering piece, which was really started with Senator Bonamici back 2 years ago. As with any compromise, there are things here that we like and we don't like, and as with any compromise, it's hard at the end to finally to wrap it up. But we appreciate the support of the committee of not only this piece of legislation, but of the coalition. And I also would like to say I'd like to express our appreciation of John Van Lanningham's hard work, Sybil's hard work, who both worked very hard on this, and Pat being involved in this over the years. Very much appreciate it. So we're hoping that this bill passes.
Thank you. Pat, you want to say, and you endorse it too, for the record? Thank you.
For the record, my name is Pat Schwach, and I represent residents who have worked with this bill since the beginning. We support it all the way, and we're eager to see it pass because I think it's good legislation.
Thank you very much. Any other questions or comments from the committee? Seeing none, let's thank you very much. We'll close the public hearing. Before I close the public hearing, there was another group of owners of parks that looked at this. They're not part of the coalition. They have some concerns, and they're going to work with the coalition to be sure that their concerns get addressed through this process in the future. I appreciate them doing that and allowing this bill to move forward without opposition. With that, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 294. Open a work session on Senate Bill 294.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendments dated May 19, 2011 be adopted to Senate Bill 294.
Chair Hovey moves dash four amendments dated May 19, 2011 to Senate Bill 294 be adopted. Further discussion? Seeing none, is there any opposition? No opposition. The amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 294 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Hovey moves Senate Bill 294 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Discussions? Seeing none, Tamara, vote, please.
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Clem.
Heck yes.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Yes.
Vice Chair Holby?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisdom?
Aye. Does someone want to carry this? Or good. Representative Clem, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay.
I vote against it on the floor.
With that, we'll close the work session on 294.
Within 2 years for this bill.
Okay, with that, we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 177. Jan, you want to tell us where we are? I don't think we have testimony on this bill. Has anyone signed up? I think so.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 177 is the bill that the committee heard a couple weeks ago about the credit union and had great discussion about the credit union service organizations at that public hearing. There are no amendments before you. There is no revenue impact, and there is no fiscal impact.
Thank you very much. Since we had no one testify or sign up to testify on this bill, we're in a public hearing. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 177. Open a work session on Senate Bill 177.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 177 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Hovey moves Senate Bill 177 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion, committee members? Seeing no discussion, Tamara, vote, please.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Clem?
Yep.
Representative
yes.
Conger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Yes.
Chair Holby?
Aye.
Chair Wisdom?
Aye. Motion carries. Does anyone want to volunteer to be a carrier of this one? Representative Hovey? Yeah. Chair Hovey, thank you. With that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 177. Committee members, we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 382.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this bill has not been before you before. It is a bill that requires the lien claimant to send required notice of lien claim only to those mortgagees that comply with the requirements to record the name and the address with the county clerk. It applies to mortgages and trust deeds recorded on or after January 1st of 2008, declaring an emergency effective on passage. Before you is a dash A4 amendment, and we have somebody here to speak to that amendment.
Yeah, Mr. Barnes.
Batson.
Batson.
Fritz Batson.
Members of the committee. My name is Fritz Batson. I'm an attorney from Eugene, Oregon, and I'm here today representing the construction law section of the Oregon State Bar in support of Senate Bill 382 and the dash A amendment that is before you. Just to give you a little context for this particular bill, since it has not been before you before, the construction law section proposed this bill in order to address a problem that construction companies are having in complying with the notice requirements in the lien statutes when addresses of assignees do not appear on recorded assignments, or when a assignment is not recorded with the county clerk but simply is registered with a private entity called MERS, the Mortgage Electronic Recording System, where the lien claimant doesn't have access to the name of the true assignee. That has created problems in our industry because the current construction lien statutes require very tight notice time frames. For instance, as little as 8 business days to provide notice to mortgagees and lenders as well as owners. And again, within 20 days after filing a lien, they have to get notices to lenders. When you don't have a name on a recorded document with an address, it's very difficult to do. Traditionally, that wasn't a problem for us because you had traditional lenders. Banks were pretty obvious when you looked at the record, where who they were and where they were at. The problems we've been encountering has been with the assignment of partial interests and trustees. For instance, we've encountered ones where you've had assignments of as little as 1/250th interest in a trustee. with transfers to entities as obscure as the Smith Family Trust that are located anywhere in the United States. Very difficult in those time periods for a small mom-and-pop operation to locate those entities or to provide them notices. The same problem has come up with respect to the MERS system. The Senate Bill 382 with the amendments simply says that for purposes of the lien statutes only, the lien claimant only has to provide notice to those mortgagees and assignees who record their mortgage or assignment with a name and address on it. Currently, the assignment statutes require the name and address to be on the assignment. We just haven't always been seeing it. And so this statute simply says if you don't do that as the assignment assignee and you don't comply with the statute, the lien claimant isn't the one that bears the burden of trying to find you and get the notice to you. With respect to mortgages, most traditional lenders already do that, but we do make it clear that, in fact, they have to and have asked that 205-234 be amended to reflect that as well. We have worked with the Bankers Association to try to address some of the concerns that they had, and I believe we've worked our way past any concerns they had. We've removed the emergency clause so the bankers have the time to modify their documents and to be able to make sure that the addresses are put on the mortgages. We have retained the retroactivity provision as to assignees as of the date that they were always required to put their address on the mortgage or on the assignment. We likewise have worked with the Bankers Association with respect to the definition of a mortgagee that's put in the lien statutes for the lien statute purposes only in order to address some definitional issues that they have, and it's our understanding they're okay with those changes. It is important to make it clear that, in fact, the proposed bill and amendment are solely for purposes of the construction lien statute. They are not intended to affect any definitions in any other statute, such as ORS Chapter 86. So it's purely for the construction lien statute that this occurs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Batson. Paul Cosgrove, do you want to come up and comment on your the dash 4 and your support or non-support of this, please? Good morning.
Mr. Co-Chair, thank you. Paul Cosgrove, representing the Oregon Bankers Association. Mr. Batson did an accurate job of explaining both the amendment and our position, which is they've addressed the concerns we had with the retroactivity provisions and the definitional provisions, and we have no objection to the bill as amended with the dash fours.
Thank you. Mr. Cosgrove, so you're representing the bankers, too. The bankers are okay with this.
I have several hats at this moment. It's the Oregon Bankers Association hat I'm on. Although I need to mention to the committee, as the committee knows, financial institutions often assign each other different bills, and frankly, all of the financial institutions that have mortgage loans were interested in this bill. It just the bankers took the lead on working with Mr. Batson.
Thank you very much.
Pleased to be able to do that.
Thank you. Committee members, questions for the panel? Chair Holding.
Thank you for coming up and explaining this. I was trying to pay attention on how you're dealing with the MERS situation in this, and so could you try to clarify that for me, because I'm not sure I really understood how you deal with the construction lien when MERS is listed.
The way that we've dealt with it is in the definitions of a mortgagee, which is a recorded mortgage that has the name and address in the mortgage. If, in fact, the mortgagee simply has MERS record a mortgage or trustee with MERS noted as a nominee for the mortgagee, the only entity that a notice would have to go to is MERS, because that would be the only entity that has a recorded trust deed or mortgage of record with any kind of an address in it. As for the private computer records that they may have for any assignments, the lien claimant doesn't have to go try to figure those out and figure out who has been assigned the mortgage or trust deed or who has a beneficial interest in the trust deed. That's how we've tried to address this. Simply say, what's of record, you give notice to.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up.
Please.
So, I know you were very specific about this applying only to the definition of mortgagee and the construction lien piece of this. And, we've had a lot of discussions about MERS and other in relationships around foreclosures. So, why couldn't we use this same sort of issue to address foreclosed properties as well with issues that we have in trying to notify the owners of the property? I'm just curious why this wouldn't work in other arenas, why it's specific to the construction lien definition.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, in fact, there are plans likely to unfold within the next few days in this session to do exactly that.
Oh.
And in fact, the position that real estate attorneys and title companies have always taken is the people who are named in a document are the people you have to deal with. If they have, without recording or telling anybody, done something, you don't have to deal with those secret parties. You just have to deal with the people who are named, and the title should be named person to named person to named person, and that's how it should be done. And that's what we've all felt that the real estate record should be. There have been some judges who might have had different conclusions, and we think that we need to probably go back to our common understanding of what the real estate records mean and how they're used. So this is very consistent with that.
Okay, great. That sort of answers my question. I was wondering how that was going to play out in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 382. Committee members will open a work session on Senate Bill 382. Chairs would like to adopt the dash fours. We do not have the financial and the revenue analysis back yet.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendments dated May 25th, 2011 be adopted to Senate Bill 382.
Chair Hovey moves dash four amendments dated May 25, 2011 to Senate Bill 382 be adopted. Any discussion? Any opposition? They're so adopted. So we'll have to carry this over to committee members. So I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 382. Let's take just a minute here and let's be sure we've got, Jen, I have, and Chair Hovey, I have four bills to carry over. We want to repeat them so we can, records are clear. 487, 491, 846, and 382.
That's what I show.
You okay with that?
Yeah.
We moved.
Okay, so we'll put on the record that the chairs agree to carry over Senate Bill 487, Senate Bill 491, Senate Bill 846, and Senate Bill 382. Committee members, thanks for your work and support. Tuesday will be our last meeting to move bills, but remember, put on your calendar, we're going to have a meeting on June the 2nd, an informational meeting that we're going to invite agencies to come in and with your input, try to develop our interim work plan. So we'll try to keep it an hour total, but appreciate your putting that on your calendars and get here so we can get that done. We have to report, give a work plan to the co-speakers. So with that, we'll adjourn the meeting.